I'm Sam Zeff. You're back on Up to Date here on KCUR 89.3. Are you a big fan of Up to Date? I bet you are. You can get more from Steve Kraske every Monday with his weekly newsletter, Kraske Off Mic. You can have it delivered to your inbox, by the way, by signing up at kcur.org/Kraske. You don't want to miss it. Go to kcur.org/Kraske to subscribe. Tomorrow, you hear his music on this program every day. It's the great Bobby Watson. He's ending his academic career at UMKC soon. We'll ask the jazz ambassador, what is next? Right now, though, over the last 10 years, we've seen an uptick in the sexual awareness among kids in middle and high school. The reason? The internet has overtaken school and family as a primary form of sex education. And that has parents wondering how young is too young to start the sex talk. Dr. Wes Crenshaw is a Lawrence family psychologist and certified sex therapist, and he's back with us on Up to Date. Wes, good morning.
Good morning, Sam.
If you want to jump in on the conversation, the number is 816-235-2888, or you can tweet your question to us. We're at KCUR Up to Date. Tell us how you approach this conversation with your children, or if you're considering it now, well, you can share your concerns. Wes, you think it's time for parents to just give up on the birds, bees, and sex talk. Yeah. Why do you think that?
Yeah, it's ask a parent, ask a kid. Nothing is more awkward than one day you're driving down the road and your parent says, there's something I've been wanting to talk to you about. And the kid's like, oh, God, here comes the sex talk. Nothing so awkward as that. And it's not the way to approach the situation at all. You just can't jump out from behind a bush and start talking about sex when somebody's 13.
You know, two questions here. One, you make it sound, and I think that if I go back to my own parental experience, that you decide to have the sex talk for no reason at all.
Usually,
right? Just
usually
right, that you're driving down the road. Right. That all of a sudden you've got the wherewithal to do it.
Yeah.
Why do we do that?
Well, because people are procrastinators. Now, I want to say, in the years we've been talking about this, it's gotten a lot better. It's getting better. I see parents more competently able to do this now than I ever have in 27 years of practice. But a lot of people still are procrastinating this because they're so uncomfortable with it. And so when they get panic-stricken about something, let's say their child is going on their, you know, their first hangout session with a desired partner, or they're going to a dance, or they see something on television that scares them, then they go into sort of emotional reactivity mode and start wanting to talk about this kind of out of the blue. And what really needs to happen instead is this needs to be an ongoing conversation. I always said if people are able to talk about the Chiefs and the Royals and, of course, the Jayhawks. If you can talk about those things at dinner like people do so often, you can talk about sex. It's just another human experience that we can learn to discuss with kids.
Does it make a difference how you were informed about this as a child when you become a parent?
Yeah, it makes a huge difference, and this is part of the reason it is getting better, is that we have a new generation of parents that are coming on that had a better experience, hopefully, with their parents, or at least they know they need to have a better experience. But traditionally, people are replicating what they grew up with, which is this kind of shame-filled, scary, emotionally reactive relationship with the sex talk.
Yeah. By the way, shame-filled and scary is exactly how I talk about the Jayhawks these days.
Now.
So when are kids ready for the sex talk, do you think?
Well, so you got to kind of understand this broader picture of the sex conversation, this ongoing conversation. And so I'm not being flippant when I say as soon as they can communicate. One of the odd things that has happened in the last few years is you'll get some folks of a certain ideology that see any discussion of sexuality with kids as, quote, sexualizing the kids. And if you're talking about body parts, or you're talking about relationships or consent, very important, these are all things that you should talk about from the time children can communicate. So just one example, we're not big fans of forcing the cat to get a hug or to force little kids to get a hug. Those are consent discussions. People might not think of that as related to sexuality, but obviously it is. And so if you teach people you have to hug grandma, you're really teaching little people that they have to, you know, succumb to someone else's will, and none of us want that. So little conversations like that early on are very important.
They talk about that a lot in daycare when kids go there in early years when they're in school, in kindergarten especially. How do you fit those talks in with what you're supposed to do as a parent?
Well, any point of interaction that kids have, whether it's in daycare or with the teacher in daycare or with the peers, these are rich opportunities to help guide people in proper interaction. And parents, I think, sometimes are a little too reactive to what other people are doing to their kid and not as noticing of what their kid is doing to others. And so if you get a report, for example, in daycare that the child's invading other people's boundaries, and it may be just, you know, lovingly, maybe the family's a big bunch of huggers, for example, or they're maybe not invading someone's boundaries so kindly. Those are things that begin a conversation that eventually becomes about how you treat a partner. And that conversation may come sooner now than later. It's quite interesting to me how sophisticated middle schoolers are now about sexuality. They can teach a sex ed class better than we could teach them.
That's changed over your 27 years. I mean, when did this change with everybody having, you know, high speed internet?
That is a big part of it. I'll tell you, I almost hate to say this. I used to not like to see middle schoolers because I didn't think they were that interesting to work with, and now they are just the most fascinating people ever. And a lot of that is because they have acquired much of it online, and also through conversation with each other, people being online and then sharing that, they've acquired a language about sexuality. And I cannot prove this statistically, but through clinical contact, if ever there was a case to be made for sex education, it is in middle school right now, because the more they are talking about it, and they talk about gender identity, and they talk about attraction profiles, and all sorts of issues, the more they talk about it, the less they're going out and having what we call PV sex, penis-vagina sex. They're having less of that now because they're talking about it and actually discussing all aspects of sexuality openly. And I see fewer kids actually engaged now as they are engaged in conversation, less engaged in the physical acts.
Yeah, you have a question about sex education, a comment? You know you do, by the way. 816-235-2888 to jump in on our conversation right now. So how do you help you in your practice help parents manage their emotions around these difficult talks?
Yeah, if you can get to them quick enough, you start helping them practice early on before some of this stuff comes up. And I try to teach people to assume a bunch of things will be coming up in their lives. This whole thing about, you know, where babies come from, boy, that is the easiest conversation to have. You know, you get some great graphics online and you show sperms and eggs and there's some cartoonish ones. It's fun. That's about a 10-minute conversation. The larger conversation is one that is more emotionally evocative for people. And so we propose you practice, you know, what else should you do on I-35 going out to the suburbs in traffic? You talk to yourself and pretend you're giving a discussion or having a discussion with your kid, and imagine that the child, you know, is having gender identity issues or sexual attraction issues. And these things come sometimes before middle school. So an early conversation with yourself about that is helpful. And then we also have what we call the PLUS model, which will appear in our consent-based sex education books. Pause, listen, understand, and be sex positive is the PLUS model. And that should just start very early on as you are working with kids. The more calm you are, the more calm the kid will be.
So you're saying that these questions from your children can happen at any time.
Yes.
And you just need to be prepared so that you don't look panicked.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of the times, if we don't teach kids that it's awkward to talk about sex, they're not going to think it's awkward to talk about sex. So the more, and I see this now with families, these kind of new generation of families come in. In the last 6 months, I have had what I would have counted as the most awkward conversations with young, typically young women in the office with their parents there. We've never been able to do this. And I turn to the kid and I say, is it okay that we're talking about this? And she'll say, yeah, it's okay. And the parents are in the game at this point. Now, is that everybody? It is not, but it shows we're making some progress.
Ellen from Overland Park, you're on with Wes Crenshaw.
Oh, hi, Wes.
Hi.
So I'm a grandmother. I grew up in that time where the only sex education we had, particularly because of Catholic schools, was don't do it, or, you know, you're a bad girl. As a grandmother of three children, I'm a big proponent of talking about sex from a very early age and talking about relationships and sex. And sex in and of itself, masturbation, whatever. But my real big concern is that too many children are becoming addicted to online porn by the time they're 9 and 10 years old. And that is where too many get to their education about what sex is. And it is as close to sex, porn is, you know, as, you know, as throwing a rock is to shooting a machine gun. It has absolutely nothing to do with sex, and it has everything to do with, you know, with violence and contemptuousness. And too many young children are being harmed physically as well as emotionally, and disconnecting them from the humanity between individuals and sexual partners. And I don't know, we're never going to get rid of it. How do I, as a grandmother, with a daughter who, you know, certainly is, I'm able to talk to about this, and I'm part of the whole group helping the kids, but how do we do this? You know, when, you know, my 10-year-old granddaughter in 2 or 3 years is going to be kissing boys who have, or trying to, who have learned that not until you have taken care of me orally will I even kiss you. What do we do for them?
Wes, what do we do?
Well, so we've done two good shows over the years on pornography on Up to Date. And if you just Google Up to Date, KCUR and my last name, they will show right up. I think they're also on our website. And we go into pretty good depth about all the issues you're talking about. But here's the short version, because it's a good question. Kids, and do not presume in any way that it is only boys. Girls are increasingly consumers of pornography. They consume it very differently, however, than do boys. And your point about it being pretty early, I looked for the show today, and I can't quite find a good number that I believe is reliable on when kids have first exposure to pornography. Most of the statistics say about 12 to 13. I think that's probably old. I think that is probably younger now, because, you know, you've got to really work at filtering that material, or they're going to have access to it. A lot of people will filter their computer and then don't filter the phone or the tablet. And it's not super high tech to do that. There are different apps you can put on there that will restrict the flow of information. But in the end, the only opportunity you really have to influence that is to have good conversations with kids about what you see as healthy sexual expression, because there's a competing message out there that you're going to want to work against. And what too many parents do, and grandparents, is to just kind of not have the conversation. And if you're up against the internet, you have to be a persuasive, almost evangelical person. And I don't mean that in the religious sense, but in the selling the values you believe sense. Because particularly, and you kind of alluded to this, pornography's general bent as we've discussed in other shows, is towards violence and degradation of women. And I don't mean as an accident. It's like a big part of their marketing. That's what's interesting. And we did another show once about that very issue. So if you look those up, I think they will be good guidance.
How do you talk to your kids about pornography without shaming them?
Yeah, very fine question. Because I agree with everything the caller said, except be careful using the word addictive. That's a word we watch out for in the sex education industry because it's probably not the best model to understand. So you want to, kids see this material as about like anything else on the internet now. That's changed in the 10 years we've been talking about this. Kids just sort of, it's just there and it's just a way they learn. So you've got to give the values to it. You've got to be able to say to them, here's what I think is important and not you're wrong for liking X, Y, or Z. And that's where the plus model comes in. If you really listen and understand, and you, when you're doing the understanding part, you alluded to this earlier, Sam, you've got to not just understand your kid, you've got to understand you and your response to this. Why? And everybody may think like, what? When I say, wonder why you're so upset about this pornography, for example. If you will sit and wonder about that a little bit, you may notice some new things you're thinking. It just shouldn't be an automatic reaction. You've got to think these things through. When you approach the child, they're going to notice that you're being thoughtful and non-judgmental. And if you're not those things, you're not going to have much of a conversation.
Do you have to take into account that, you know, humans are different, even if they have your own DNA? As your child is getting older, their approach to sexuality could be quite a bit different than yours.
Absolutely.
And do you have to measure all of that?
We have a whole chapter in the Consent-Based Sex Education, Book 1, about differentiation parenting. And the idea being that your goal is not to invent a mini-me. Your goal is to support your child's differentiation from you. And they may have a different attraction profile than you. They may be attracted to same-sex partners. They may be attracted to both gender or all genders of partners. So yes, and they may have a different view of what it means to be sexual. There are those who are identifying now as what's called ace or asexual. There are a whole range of things that parents may not have themselves thought of before that they need to be prepared to explore with their kids as very different people, DNA or not.
You know, I'm feeling, even though my son is now almost 27, I am feeling really overwhelmed by all this information.
Yeah.
Thankful that my son is 27 and not 7. So, you know, help me with this. You know, I can't be the only one listening to this conversation feeling overwhelmed. So, you know what? Find some way to help me here.
Here's how bad it is, Sam. When we went to start writing these books, it's been several years now we've been working on it. I have a wonderful co-author that works with me, a young adult, was a high school student when she started. And we thought this was going to be a manageable project. And this now is 1,000 pages, 4 books at 1,000 pages of material just for parents to be ready to deal with all these issues. So in starting out young with kids, the good news is if you will begin this in the elementary years, it will be such a natural experience. And if you will read and keep track of this admittedly overwhelming material, it's just a natural experience. When you sit down and think about all the things people know, I'll go back to the sports thing. People just know so much, and sports isn't my thing, it's my wife's thing, and she knows every player on the Chiefs and where they went to college, and I don't know that she can quote all their stats, probably she can, I don't know, but that's a lot of knowledge, and I think you just have to be able to embrace that kind of learning with something that really is not only core to our culture, but, you know, our propagation of the species and everything else, and not a lot is more important in our world than sexuality.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting that you would draw the sports analogy, right? Because now, you know, you watch a football game, And there's a lot of talk about the run-pass option. And now they just abbreviate it to the RPO. Like you're supposed
knows.
To know what the hell that means, right? It's and with so much more information available, both in school and online, it feels like it's a fire hose. And when you push it through the filter of sexuality, which, as you say, is a cornerstone of a relationship and propagation of the species, you didn't really help me there not feel overwhelmed. Is what I'm saying.
I think the 1,000 pages probably didn't help, did it? It really, I'll tell you from the more one-to-one personal level, the and I have 25 of these I could do, but recently had a case of a middle schooler who was identifying transgender. And you know what most people would, a small town person in the state, and most people would begin to worry about, you know, bullying and how will they be accepted in their school and how will their parents accept anything. And in this younger parent's world, they embraced this. They came to the therapist not to correct the child or anything else, but to help facilitate this process. They came with a lot of information. They asked for a lot more information. Their interface with the school and with the court for name changes and birth certificate changes in Kansas, small town Kansas, has been just lovely. The school has been supportive. So when you see people starting, and they've always been very open with their child. We went back and, you know, we study this when you're doing this kind of work. They've always had a very open, close relationship with the child. So in this case and several others, the child came to them first. And this is unprecedented. Well, it's becoming less unprecedented. Historically, a child was out to everybody before they would go to the parent. Mm-hmm. In these cases, they can go to the parent first. So these folks didn't, they're not encyclopedias. They're not professors of sex education. They were just people who really built an open conversation so that as the child aged, their experience and knowledge aged, and it didn't feel as overwhelming. In fact, they're like the least overwhelmed people I've met in a long time. It's quite remarkable, and I have a number of those examples.
816-235-2888. There's still some time to get your question in for Wes Crenshaw about sex education, how to talk to your kids. I want to keep going just for a second on transgendered. This is something that I think it's not new, but I think the discussion of it, the open discussion of it, the bringing in, I mean, I have a friend who teaches in the Shawnee Mission District who says it's unusual now to not go through the day and have a transgender student. So talk to me about how that additional talk that you may have to have with your kid.
So in an ideal scenario, and I should mention on my posted on my blog the CECAS guidelines for very specific age-appropriate developmental language. And it is inclusive of this idea of understanding gender as somewhat fluid and non-binary. So there are a number of changes in language. I'll give you a simpler one to ease us into it. With my kids and with any kid I work with, I always say, so are you partnered? Do you have a dating partner? How is your partner? Making it neutral so that, first of all, sexual attraction isn't assumed to be opposite. Using the same approach with gender, you can, talk to people about what's your friend's pronouns, for example. It is now common to see people list their pronouns after their name. Having that conversation with just taking out some of your assumptions that your child is going to be friends with or be in a dating relationship with someone who is what we refer to as cisgender, it's just something you have to kind of change your language for, even with young kids.
Richard from KCK. You're on Up to Date with Wes Crenshaw.
Hi. About 20 years ago, I was a volunteer at one of my kids' elementary schools in Liberty. And their computer started running slower in the library. I got on to try to figure out why, and it was maxed out with porn that fifth graders had figured out how to get past the parental control function. That's when we need to start the discussion of sex ed, fifth grade. This was 20 years ago,
yeah,
not middle school.
That's a good story. Oh, yeah. It points out that this isn't just brand new, is it? The battle to try to filter, it's like an arms race, filter and get around, filter and get around. And so while the main reason I'm for filtering is because you're sending a message, whether it's the school or the family, you're sending a message that says, we don't think this is a great material for you to see. One of the interesting things on a previous up-to-date that came up was whether parents should curate pornography for their kids. We had a guest in, that young college woman, who was proposing that would be a good idea. And she made very rationally, I don't want to argue against her. But in the book, I actually lay out why that's not a great idea, other than it's creepy. But beyond that, it's just, we don't want to be saying, hey, here's the porn you should look at, despite some logical arguments to the contrary. But we really have to be able to describe what the porn is without saying, here's some good porn. We say, I have a list of things that I think are important. Consent-based, non-coercive, it shows some relational characteristics, that it's technically correct. A huge percentage of pornography just isn't even technically correct. It's like the earlier caller said. I say it's like learning about animals from watching Roadrunner and Wile E. Coyote. It's not accurate material. Those are the kind of things to share with kids without saying, hey, here's some good porn.
Dr. Wes Crenshaw, always nice to have you here on Up to Date. You mentioned some material on your website. Where do we find it?
Familypsychological.com. Very simple. And you can also link it through my Dr. Wes, dr-wes.com. And I've listed all those guidelines, and parents can check them off like a little checklist from CGIS.
Wes Crenshaw, thanks very much.
Good to be here.
Friday on the show, why municipal IDs would benefit thousands of Wyandotte County residents. Hear that and other previous episodes at kcur.org/up-to-date. Give us a follow on the Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date. I'm at Sam Zeff. And don't forget to like KCUR on Facebook. Tomorrow, the composer of Up to Date's theme is here. Bobby Watson will talk about drawing his academic career to a close and what's next for the internationally renowned saxophonist. Our program is produced by Danny Alexander, Luke Martin, Elizabeth Ruiz, and Jamie Hobbs. I'm Sam Zeff. You're up to date.